Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gabaza, and for today, it is a Friday, which means we get into the economics news of the week. And it's been, you know, the first week in which we're receiving, you know, some of the decisions and economic data coming out. And to help us to unpack some of the developments of the week, we're joined by someone who's no stranger, Peter Bauer, who is a professor at the University of Johannesburg School of Economics. Peter, greetings to you and compliments of the new season.
Greetings to you and compliments of the season to you too. Thank you so much for the invitation.
I think a good place for us to start is probably something that was big news in 2020, and that was interest rates. We saw this week the Reserve Bank's Monetary Policy Committee coming out with its first interest rate decision of the year. Last year, we saw them cutting interest rates in a way that they hadn't done in a number of years. But for now, they've decided to, you know, start the year on a dovish note by sticking to, you know, the same levels. What do you make of their decision this week?
I think that's actually quite a good idea, especially in terms of Reserve Bank and the monetary policy. I don't see this as actually being a restrictive monetary policy approach. In this sense, I think we will be experiencing a degree of inflation as we go forward, predominantly around the food price index. And at least we will, I think the cost of production this year will also be going up somewhat, especially if we look at what has been happening in terms of probably changes in terms of the minimum wages or proposed changes in terms of minimum wages. And also, I think households are under huge pressure as well. And there's a lot of so we say funding through debt. So households are using debt in the moment to drive, to pay some of the bills. And all of this could have an inflationary pressure on the economy. And so I think in this sense, I don't think this is necessarily a bad move right now.
On that end, when it comes to that, that inflationary pressure, you know, being a reality as it is, would you say that, you know, maybe contrasting to what's going on in the U.S. where they are in the process, they've just signed off on a new round of stimulus, you know, that's likely to see the coming quarters, you know, being stable or, you know, some type of, you know, quote unquote growth. Do you think that's sort of the same effect we will see locally, that because interest rates are, you know, at the levels that they are and South Africa relies as much as it does on debt, that these are all just ways for government to be encouraging some type of consumption in the economy?
Yes, I think I would rely more on fiscal policy, some form of stimulus for fiscal policy for more government spending, for example, to try and stimulate the economy that way. In this particular case, I think that the monetary authorities are being more conservative. We're going to most likely see with the Biden administration coming in, more open agreements to trade with a lot more developing countries, especially South Africa. So we are also going to notice that there's a big possibility that the economy should, at least the trade relationships between South Africa and America should start improving again, especially given the fact that they may sort of change slowly or reverse some of the Trump administration decisions in terms of trade. And all of this might bide quite well for us. And a challenge that we're facing in the moment, I think, are the cost push inflation numbers. So, for example, the cost of energy, petrol prices being a concern for us. That's obviously putting upward pressure, especially on food prices, for example. And then, of course, cost of labor. If you take a look at the real costs of actually employing people, that could have an impact on us. And it's not that the households are actually, shall we say, unreasonably demanding wages. I just think that the general nature of the economy is leading itself towards that direction.
Now that you've actually brought that issue up of what's going on in the different parts of the economy. I want us to switch over to, maybe not switch over because it's one of those things that is sort of looming over us and has for the last year, and that's COVID-19. Because when we got into lockdown, there was that sharp decline in economic activity that we saw, and that was understood. People are at home, businesses were closed. Schools and all of that, a lot of economic activity not happening. But in this second wave, I'm trying to grapple, trying to understand what the actual economic impact is. Because on the one hand, yes, people are still at home and social distancing, but on the other side, apart from alcohol, most of, if not all of, the economic activities that people were restricted on in level five are allowed to happen at the moment. We can go to restaurants at least during the day. You can go to a shopping center. You can still do all of these things. So, what do you make of the current second wave that we're in, which has seen infections rising to all-time highs?
Absolutely. This became actually quite a serious matter, I think. I believe that we were very strict on business and very restrictive in terms of our economy during the first wave. And I think we learned a lot of lessons in how to go about managing that process. If you take a look at what is happening in many overseas countries, especially amongst the members of the European Union, we see a lot of industry, or not industries, but a lot of consumer-based businesses have been forced to close in order to minimize the risk of COVID spread. And in the case of South Africa, we are definitely going to see quite a strong impact of that. Much of that impact of COVID is still going to continue to be negative. I'll give you an example. Bankruptcies between January and between January and December last year rose from January, we had 125 registered bankruptcies. By December, it was 272. So we more than doubled our total number of bankruptcies. And so businesses have been affected. And of course, the unemployment rate rose from approximately 25% in early 2020 to about 30.8% by the end of the year. And so we can see that the negative implications of COVID are there and they're here to stay. I also believe that we're going to see a change in the nature of business. And as harsh as COVID was, maybe forcing a lot of businesses to move online, for example, employees working from home, may change the way in which businesses operate and actually have a positive impact in terms of their running costs. In other words, you may find that if businesses are able to continue in this kind of process where we've seen people working from home, the one big industry which is going to be harmed by this is the office park businesses. And I think many of them may even start turning into white elephants over time as time goes on, because businesses may find it's more efficient if we can continue to manage our workers, but on an online basis. Obviously, that's not possible for all industries, but in the industries where it is possible, this COVID has forced us to really relook at the cost of rental space. It's made us relook at online business and the effects of online business, and also how employees can manage themselves in an online environment.
I can definitely see what you're saying about the office parks. Talking to a number of business leaders mid last year, that was the big debate. Are we ever going to go back to the office? What's going to happen to campuses? What's going to happen to office parks? What's happening to office buildings? And for a number of businesses, it's fine. We've signed 6 month to a year leases. We're just going to wait it out. And a lot of people thought that by January we would be, back to normal life, back to the office, and all of that. But life in its own musings has decided to go in a completely different direction, and that really is a huge issue that I think a lot of property owners are going to, be struggling with in the coming months. But I wanna maybe follow up to, that thought. and get a sense from you, because as someone who is in tertiary education, just the education sector as a whole, that's also been a big debate. It's also a big space of economic activity, teachers, tertiary, secondary, and then primary. This whole going to school online versus coming to class, where are you seeing things going in 2021?
Okay, so I believe that the universities, at least on the tertiary, well, let's say to universities, technicons, many of the tertiary level, or shall we say the older students, will most likely, at least in the beginning, the first half of 2021, be online. I really do believe that, for example, University of Johannesburg has made a huge shift in terms of gearing most of its programs online. There are certain courses, naturally, where laboratories and computers are going to be required, where students are going to be expected to come in to work. But there's definitely going to be a stronger shift online. But that poses in itself a number of problems. Firstly, the problems with some of the students. For example, there are students who prefer to be on campus during the semester because it actually helps facilitate studies in a better way. While they would be at home, they'd be expected to do household chores, anything from working in the family business to fetching water, for example. And when they're working when they're at university, they're out of the environment and they can focus then on their studies. So that is one thing that is definitely a concern, is if students are not allowed to go into an environment where they would find the space in which to study, that could impact negatively on them. Another challenge is the younger students who are going to rely on parents to push them through the semester. So parents who are now staying at home, working on online environment, all fair and well, but if the children are home too and there are certain homework tasks that are required, these parents are now put on a bit of a double pressure in order to not only deliver work, but they're also expected to work together with their children. And that's put pressure on schools and teachers for deliverables as well. So when we ask our students questions like what is required for them to be able to continue in this process, a big challenge is data and how students do struggle with data. I know that some of the service providers, especially your 3G or 4G data providers, they have a tendency to offer great deals in the evening, sort of like they call it the midnight owl, for example. And what is actually happening is students are now changing their sleeping patterns. So they will study at night while they have access to the data, and then during the day they're trying to catch up with their sleep. And so in order to so data and data management becomes now a huge concern. Another problem as well with this is that the cost of data in South Africa is relatively expensive. And I think here there's an opportunity now for government and also within the private sector and maybe even some foreign investors where possible to bring in stronger data initiatives, wider range data, stronger data flows, bigger bundles, broader bandwidth in order to facilitate this online business environment. And here we do really need them to step up. The data providers themselves also, it would be really great, and I'm going to now be talking on behalf of a great many students. Many of these students come from extremely disadvantaged backgrounds or even rural areas and sort of communities where they don't have access to frequent electricity and data, and they're under enormous pressure, and we would really like to see our service providers actually up the game, especially to support these young people.
I tend to agree with you on the, on that sentiment about data and the type of impact it has on learning, especially in this online environment, and that there are sections of the society and learners that might not have the same type of access. And the problem is compounded by those issues, like data. And I think the thing that interests me the most is the fact that even though the price of data on the two major networks has come down between 40 and 50% in the last year, the outlook is that data is still expensive, which sort of shows you how expensive it actually was. Because if after cutting it by half, people still view it as expensive, then it was really, really expensive, in the past.
But this ties up as well with the technology and access to the kind of technology that people are going to require. And even though the rand in the moment is showing signs of appreciation and has actually done reasonably well in terms of the US dollar or the euro, we are actually seeing that the cost of technology that the kind of students need today in order to be competitive is actually going up. And so, there as well, perhaps something in terms of finding ways in facilitating access for young people or small businesses or SMMEs to actually get access to technology that they would require in order to perform their studies. And even if you take a look at the cost of cell phones, many of these kids are using smartphones to do some of their work. And it's quite amazing actually how they are able to do this. But when you see an assignment where a student has typed an entire assignment on a cell phone, it just shows you the nature of the way in which technology is changing and how we need to also relook and adapt how we're going to do it in the future. I mean, I could send the question right back at you. Do you think we will really ever go back to bringing interviewees into the studio again, or have we moved to a position where it's actually now much, much more feasible to actually interview people online, for example? And I think your industry is also going to be very much affected by this.
No, you bring up an excellent point. I mean, I would love to go back to a studio environment because it's an environment that has I can call it less friction. Because, for example, the fact that we are doing this remotely means that the processes along the way to get a podcast, for example, to go up on Spotify, Apple, wherever people are listening, becomes longer because there are new layers that are introduced. Because back in the day, you and I would have met in the studio, spoken in the studio, and then we would have our producer like Modiehi would sit, edit it, and then I would write an article page, and then we get it published. But now there's another layer where things are being recorded, and then at the same time I then have to send audio to Modiehi and make all of that happen. So that adds more timelines and all of that. But what you're saying is a fact. But on the good side, it doesn't mean that because we're virtual, we can open ourselves up to having guests like yourself sitting in Joburg or someone who's sitting in Singapore, for example, because technology allows us to break down some of those distance barriers.
Absolutely. But I mean, even if we take a look at how fashion has now been changing recently in some of the basically around the whole world, there was a time when you'd have to dress up every day to go to work. And now people are spending the entire day in their pajamas. For me, for one, right now, I can quite easily confess that I'm still in my pajamas and it's early afternoon. I've been working all day. And what we have been seeing in some of the European countries, for example, is people going now onto the streets to go do their basic shopping, still continuing to wear their slippers and their pajamas. And this has actually made us really relook at the way in which how this has actually impacted even on the shall we say the trading side of things. And me for one, I've noticed as well that actually I don't go out as often. Obviously, we do worry a lot about social distancing. We worry about the impacts if somebody gets affected because we are all now exposed to this. But at the same time, so retailer stores and the kind of consumer related industries are clearly going to continue to be not infected, sorry, let's rephrase, be affected by this, in the sense that consumers will probably not shop as often. There will still be online shopping, but I think the psychology behind online shopping is going to be slightly different to walking through a shop. In a shop, there are more purchases made. Many of them are based on like how you're feeling at that point in time, how hungry you are when you pick up the item. I mean, there's a rule, never go shopping when you're hungry. I'm particularly bad on that one. And then you come home with all kinds of things that you would not normally need. But there will be the online shop is going to be different. They're more planning orientated. And so I think the retailers, some of the retailers may also be affected by this kind of this nature of business as well. Unfortunately, of course, this is going to have an impact on the di this is actually going to highlight the divergence between your rich and your poor communities, because the poorer communities who don't have access to this are still going to be forced into a situation where they are going to have still go to local shops. Prices may be now still much higher for them to deal with. You may find that their choice is going to be less. They may not have access to the means of purchasing online. Most online purchases are done through banking systems, and there are people out there that don't have this. So again, you know, if we take a look at what COVID's done, obviously the wealthy are going to gain from this, and the poorer communities are gain at a loss. And so leveling the playing field between the rich and the poor is something that we really, really need to relook at again as well in terms of monetary and fiscal policy.
You know, I feel like this conversation ended up being, much more wide-ranging than I thought it was gonna be. I mean, we've gone from interest rates, all the way into, online education, what's happening in that space, to fashion, to, e-commerce. And there is one more sector, because as you give your outlook for the year, there is one more sector that I know that you in particular are quite passionate about, and that's arts and culture. How are you seeing, that particular sector of society faring in 2021? And I ask that because it's probably one of the more entrepreneurial led sectors in the country.
Yes, absolutely. The School of Economics at the University of Johannesburg has formed an art and cultural, shall we say, unit, and we have teamed up with the Art and Cultural Trust. And the Art and Cultural Trust is an incredible organization which actually looks into the heart of many of the challenges of artists of all kinds, from performance to your more static arts. And they actually analyze and they look at ways in which we can all work together to try and solve some of the problems and dilemmas that artists and the art community are facing. One of the industries that were greatly affected has been the theatre industry, theatre and the performing arts, dance, and many of the cultural industries too have been very, very harshly hit through COVID last year. And the challenge is, as long as we cannot open our theatres up the way we used to, we cannot open up our performance studios, it makes it more difficult. There are different kinds of media, naturally. You still have your television, etc. But the real traditional and the community-based arts and culture don't have access once again to that. So we can see that the arts have been impacted quite strongly by this. What I've been also we've been doing is been analyzing market sentiments. We're looking at the markets out there, and we look at the sentiment around arts and culture, and we can actually see that there were strong relationships between what has actually been happening in the art market and what has been happening in the financial markets. And so the two industries do have a way of supporting each other, as well as they feed into each other. So the arts and cultural sector is incredibly important within South Africa, and also greatly under-supported still. And I think now, especially given the impact of COVID, I think it would be really wonderful if our authorities, our powers, our fiscal policy could start aiming some of the funding towards developing, growing, and better supporting artists, because the artists hold the heart of a nation. They keep a nation alive. It's the arts that keep a nation alive. And it keeps our belief system going. It keeps us going through difficult times. It's the light at the end of the tunnel. And we truly, truly need to support our arts and cultural sector in the same way we would support our technology sector, because both of them, while being opposite ends of the coin, they're still the same coin, and we need this coin to stimulate this economy further.
Perhaps on a last point about this topic, because the importance, I can definitely identify with that. Do you guys have any type of metrics that you keep or that you use to sort of measure the arts and culture sector in South Africa? Because tourism industry usually is quick to tell us that they, before lockdown, they employed 1.5 million people, contributed about 8% of GDP, that type of thing. Are there any, such measures for arts and culture in SA?
Well, specifically for SA, it's a bit difficult. We have the Citadel Index, which came pretty close, where we tried at some stage to actually look through, let's say, Rhodes University to look at the role of arts and culture within South Africa. But there are other industry, well, the other indexes that we use is the, for example, the R Price Index, which is more a global one. But when it comes to regional impacts, that is where we are now busy looking at developing better measurement techniques and tools to actually really understand the arts and cultural sector. And in when we while we develop these tools, we're going from everything from your Google databases, which collect information on where people spend time, how much traveling between different sectors, and we can actually see that the we've actually during throughout the heart and arts and culture during the heart of the COVID crisis, we performed we wrote a paper or published we're publishing a paper on what has actually happened in the arts and cultural sector. And we can what we saw from the findings of this particular research showed us that even though there were many challenges that artists had to face, even through the heart of COVID, the arts and cultural sector maintained itself and was able to still continue to show signs of growth. Not every part of the arts and cultural sector grew equally well, but different sectors contributed overall towards a positive growth. So the arts and cultural sector plays a big role in terms of employing people, and yet even through the heart of it, while we were facing a huge economic crisis, that arts and cultural sector within South Africa showed signs of economic growth.
So that's been it. We're with Peter Bauer, who is a professor at the University of Johannesburg's School of Economics, giving us some insight into what's happened this week in terms of the new interest rate decision that came out, where the Reserve Bank has decided to keep interest rates unchanged for now, just talking about what that outlook will look like and possibly how, in a country like South Africa that relies so much on debt, that we're likely to see that putting some type of inflationary pressures on the economy, but a good thing as it allows people to keep doing business. And then just talking about what's actually happening in the US, we saw a transfer of power. Joe Biden was inaugurated as the 46th president of the United States on Wednesday, and he's just Prof is just pointing out the fact that there's likely to be a softening of relations between the US and emerging markets, particularly South Africa, and that could have a good impact on us down here. And then just getting into what the impact of COVID-19 has been on different parts of the economy, from e-commerce all the way right down to online education and the impact on the education sector, and ending off talking about arts and culture, which they are in the process of trying to find ways to actually measure to see what the economic impact is, but nonetheless just expressing how important the sector is to South Africa. So Prof, as always, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much for inviting me to this to your program. It's a great honor to be your guest. Thank you very much.
This is Mudiwa's Tech.
2021 is proving itself to be a different type of year. It's different simply because people thought that the end of 2020 would bring with it the end of the problems, whether it be the health risks that continue to go up on a daily basis, or whether it be the economic fallout as a result of those health risks. But I'm just trying to, you know, encourage people at the moment to just, you know, stay strong, stay firm in, you know, what you believe, you know, but more than anything else, stay safe out there, because it's just tough going through this period. You know, to say that it's been tough is perhaps an understatement, because I think what makes the second wave different from the first wave is the fact that in the first wave, yes, we saw the numbers ticking up, etc. But after some time, it really did start seeming as if there were just statistics that we're hearing on a daily basis. But in the second wave, a lot of statistics have turned into names, particularly in this part of the world. The second wave has really hit us hard in the SADC region. So the encouragement, because at the end of the day, the economy is a collection of individuals. And the most important thing is that the collection of individuals does everything, you know, just to survive, support each other, and make sure that, you know, you make the most of each day so that, you know, we can actually go back to a situation where we start seeing some of that economic growth. On interest rates, you know, it was, you know, more or less expected that they were going to, you know, keep things the same. Yes, there had been some talk that there is some room to go down, but largely expected, unsurprising on that end. And one just hopes that whatever credit people do take during this time, because, you know, interest rates are low, that it is used wisely. A lot of people have lost income, so it does make sense that the level of borrowing has gone up. And we just hope that as vaccinations start at the end of this month into next month, that we will get to that position where, you know, we can take things forward again. And then on a last point, the, you know, very interestingly, on the side of arts and culture that Prof is very passionate about, is just to see by the end of, you know, specifically this year, you know, what that's actually going to look like. Are people going to go back to clubbing, for example? Are people going to go back to going to concerts, concert halls and that type of thing? Because on the performance side, that is a big thing that has been taken out of 2020. And we wait to see whether it's going to be taken up again in 2021. The virtual show, how comfortable have people become with virtual shows? Has it been enough? My feeling is that it hasn't, but some, you know, there might be a generation that actually thinks that, okay, fine, virtual shows or something, is that something that's actually going to remain into the long term? And then lastly, because all of these things have an impact, we saw at the end of last year, Warner Brothers and HBO actually announcing the fact that for 2021, they would be releasing big Hollywood titles straight to streaming on HBO Max. We saw that with the Wonder Woman movie. And these are ways in which the arts and culture sort of sector has seen its business models sort of shifting and its economics changing because of coronavirus. So wait to see what that's going to look like. I think we're going to have a hybrid in some industries, whereas some industries, it's going to be a bit of a decimation, because movies, for example, the price of a movie ticket is about the same as a month's worth of unlimited watching on one of the streaming services. So how do they compete? Because they're going to have to make their offering more experiential now. We're likely going to see a cutting down of moving theaters going forward. But we will likely see people trying to go back to concerts, so there might be that balance going forward. Otherwise, as always, you know, we sit, we think, we try to look in crystal balls, but the reality is we just wait and see. So that's been it. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the Podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter. We're #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller, together with Modiehi Mashimayete. I'm Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.